Mother-Daughter Journey. Okay, we're rolling. Hi, everyone.
Good to be back for our third episode.
Yeah, in the series. I'm excited for it, too. I think this also ties into us, like, not appearing to have everything together all the time because it's the first thing in the morning, and I am a little bit irritable.
Yes.
And like right before we went on, I've just been like doing audio checks and stuff like that. So then I felt like I feel fake to just be like, hi guys, how you doing today?
Mood swings.
In today's episode, we're really diving deep into functional relationships. But in my opinion, like if we want to understand how to recognize a functional relationship, we also have to have a really solidified understanding of what dysfunction is, which I think is kind of subjective as well. Like the same thing with red flags being subjective, like it's going to be different for every person.
And yes, so much of it is dependent on what you grew up with and
what was normalized and modeled.
And, you know, you spoke in the last episode about your conditioning, which I think is so important because it's really difficult to identify dysfunction if you grew up with it and if it was normalized.
Right.
So there is a huge learning curve that I think is everyone's responsibility. Mm-hmm. Not everyone takes that on. And a lot of people reproduce dysfunction.
Right.
And the power is in, you know, the Buddhists call the cycle of samskara or samsara, that conditioning. It's our responsibility to put the stick in the spoke of the wheel of momentum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we visited with a woman just last week who was brought up very dysfunctionally with a lot of emotional abuse. And I said at the end of the conversation, how beautiful that you can sit here and say that your kids are not being brought up in the same way that you were. And she said, absolutely not. The abuse stops with me.
Mm. And love that.
Yeah, it's so powerful and it's so possible today, you know, in previous generations, we didn't have Google, we didn't have therapy that was readily available and we didn't talk openly about mental health. So I think the opportunity is there for us today. And I just want to say that before we came on, Blair was really excited about this episode. He's like, yeah, this is my strong suit. And I said, yeah, because you trust nobody. You do trust people, but you're like...
It takes time to earn his trust too. He's like really cautious person.
Super cautious. You are like the king of suspicion.
Yeah.
You're very suspicious until people prove themselves. And I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I've lived my life very naively, I believe.
Yeah.
And and while I see the good in people,
yeah,
and I bring out the good in people because of that, I have certainly brought people into my life who weren't worthy of being there.
I think it's really interesting. I think I take on characteristics from both of you guys because
yes.
I am quite a cautious person when I bring people into my life, and you won't gain my trust for a while. Also because I've had difficulties with people in the past who I've given my trust to really freely. But I also tend to be someone who will share a lot about their life with others, sometimes naively so. So that in a sense is trusting them.
Overly trusting.
Yeah.
Would you say it's overly?
I think so, because there's aspects of my life that are personal to me that I just will talk about anyways, because, I mean, I literally talk about everything on this podcast. Like, that could be overly trusting.
Yeah, I think it's your relationship with vulnerability. And
yeah.
You seem to be okay with it. And I think it is important to trust, because without trust, we can't really navigate the world. But Blair, I'd love for you to share your kind of the birth of your discernment. And, you know, you as a little kid growing up, and what, you know what I mean, what caused you to be so discerning and careful?
I think for me, it's growing up as a child of an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And also in a home where we were also bootlegging.
Yeah.
So I needed to discern who was safe,
right,
and who's not safe. I'm also reflecting back to a time when I was at a wedding when I was younger. And as we talk about what people accept in their lives, and it was a wedding, and I looked at this table, and one of the fathers at the table with all his family around him was drinking quite heavily. He was an alcoholic. And the next time I looked over, basically he was asleep with his face on the table, and everybody ate like...
And he was passed out.
Yeah, there was nothing wrong. And that said to me that they were normalizing it. How can you continue to have a meal
right
with somebody with their face flat on the table and not just get up and leave? Mm-hmm. Because you're just accepting that this is going on. It wasn't my father. It was somebody else's father.
Wow.
And it was at a time when we didn't really understand alcoholism as much as we do now.
Right.
Nor would we even see it as a red flag. Now, remember, I'm 70.
Yeah.
And I've been around for a long time. And I remember when I started studying children of alcoalcoholism, there was no studies done on it. There was a program in the States where they were just beginning. And I went and studied with that organization. But people really didn't realize the effect of alcoholism on the family. So for me, a big red flag is I watch people and they're drinking.
That's mm-hmm. interesting.
So that's a major red flag for me, right? And again, I have to come back to the fact that I have to know who's safe, who's not safe. And that started probably at the age of 5.
Right.
I don't think you've shared on the pod what you used to do when people came to your door to buy booze. I think it speaks to your degree of curiosity, which enabled you to sever the momentum.
Yeah, and determine that it's a red flag.
Yes.
Like you were able to look at these people and consciously decide that you didn't want to be like them and that their behavior was a red flag. Whereas you could have just gone the opposite route, which is it is normal, which means I'm going to look for that in relationship.
Yeah. I think your mother's talking about how I used to ask people when they came in for a drink and I saw they were in really bad shape, because an alcoholic will come in at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And their hand is shaking with each extra drink they have, the hand shakes less.
Yeah.
And before I would give them the first drink, I would say, do you really want that drink?
Yeah.
Or is this the day you want to give it up? And that was at a very young age, probably 9, 10.
So at a very young age, you were questioning the family culture.
I was questioning
and people's paths
that people were taking.
Yeah.
But I also feel like you're questioning the path that was set before you as well, because technically speaking, you could have just followed along the same road.
And which so many people do.
Yeah.
Yes, I could have. And I'm just very lucky that the genetics have not gotten me as they got everybody else in my family.
That's right.
A red flag, okay? A red flag could be is that I remember going, again, studying children of alcoholism and being with Julie Bowden and saying to me that I think you have an addiction problem. And I said, no, I don't need a drink. And she said, well, if you don't need a drink, then give it up. And I remember saying to the people that, okay, I'll give it up. You know, she said, well, give it up for 3 weeks. I said, I'll give it up for 6 months. And so I left there, and I felt like a bit of a poser because I wasn't really going to do it. I just wanted to get her off my back.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so I leave there, and it's hilarious because booze is really cheap in the States. So I had a suitcase full of booze, and I'm coming through the Toronto airport, and they say, what were you doing in the States? And I said, studying children of alcoholism, so no one ever checked my suitcase, right? So I got across the border with all this booze, and then I get back to Halifax and think, how can I do that to these people? How can I be a fake in that way? And so I decided to give it up for 6 months, and in the 6 months, I discovered I wasn't addicted to booze. I was addicted to love.
Yeah.
So when you clear the table, right? When you clear the table of anything that you use to stop feeling, then what comes up are the true addictions. So when I cleared the table and I wasn't using any alcohol to do any numbing, what came up was the fact that I was addicted to having people love me.
Which satisfied temporarily a root wound of what? Feeling unlovable, abandoned.
Well, that goes back to the mother, right?
Like, yeah.
Again, when if you look at your mother, Sophia, she's always been extremely present to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know my mother loved me, right? There's no question about whether my mother loved me. But she came from a different culture and a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought, she used to say, I was the perfect baby. You could leave me in the playpen all day and I wouldn't complain, right? I wouldn't complain. Well, a baby should be held.
Yeah.
Right? And it should be near the mother. And I wasn't breastfed. I was bottle fed. Yeah. Now, I'm not here to blame mother. I'm here to say that these are what can cause you issues in relationships later, such as looking for the mother, right? And Sophia's talking about functional, dysfunctional. Well, if I'm a man looking for a mother, that should be a red flag to you.
Right.
Right? To say, okay, he's looking for someone to take care of him. He's looking for someone to nurture him.
I have actually had a little bit of experience. Like, I give a lot of myself pretty freely. And I also, because I think both of you guys are therapists, I really like holding space for other people's pain. But I think that that can also put me in a situation where, you know, I've had a guy basically see me as someone to nurture him through everything. And it was a difficult experience for me, but also really interesting because I had never been placed in that role before. And I didn't really question it until I kind of got out of the situationship where I was like, that was pretty dysfunctional. If I continued down that road, I would have been holding huge amounts of space for feelings and almost trying to heal this deeper core wound. That just becomes really tricky because I see a relationship as we've talked about this in the previous episodes, it's like a two-way thing. Like both people have to be contributing to it for it to grow and evolve. And so there's like an imbalance in power or an imbalance in contribution there.
Well, I think what you're speaking of, and you know, we're not placing blame. Alcoholism is an addiction. It's a mental health crisis. This situation that you found yourself in, it's totally unconscious on the part of the other person. They just want to feel better.
Yeah.
And so they end up unconsciously vampiring your energy because they just want to feel better. And you've got all this love and resources and wisdom to share. And how amazing that you were able to remove yourself and then see, ooh, that would have been very dangerous had I stayed in that dynamic. And so often we find ourselves, especially if we're empathic, sensitive people, we find ourselves in that situation where we're the caregiver. And yeah, it's an important red flag for sure.
So I think that's probably one of mine. But I also think that where if red flags can be subconscious on the part of like either person, they become more dangerous when they're conscious, right? That's how I see it, because control tactics for me, I think, are very conscious and they become addictive, I think, for the other person to be able to leverage such control over another and gain what they want from doing so. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I don't know that it's fully within their conscious control.
Okay.
On behalf of the controller. I think that there's so many unconscious patterns. I think we're all just trying to feel safe and be happy.
Right.
It may not be conscious.
I am remembering Khalil Gibran's words on relationships. And he talks about the cedar and the oak tree growing side by side. and both being very strong, yet not in each other's shadow. Mm. So if you're looking for a functional relationship, it's about both growing side by side and both being strong at the same time.
Was that read at our wedding?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I love that.
That's what you want to look for. You want to be supportive.
Right.
Of the other individual. You don't want to be shadowed by them.
Yeah.
Right? So you can grow. And you want to remain strong in the relationship because that person may come, but they may go. Mm-hmm. And also, when they do go, it would be like losing a branch of the tree, but the tree still remains strong.
Mm-hmm. Can I suggest something? Why don't we go around and explain like our top three red flags?
Love it.
I'll start then.
Yeah, like go ahead.
So, top three red flags. Well, obviously the first one for me will be alcohol.
Right.
I watch people and how much they drink and how much they share when they're drinking in terms of do they use the alcohol to fuel their personality. Hmm. I watch to see if they remain the same, right? There's a vast difference in their behavior from when they're sober and they're drinking. I'm thinking, okay, that can be a red flag. Right. They're using that alcohol to be something that they're not. Mm-hmm. Now, for everybody out there that's listening to this, they think, well, I drink and I get happy. Well, I'm not saying that everyone. I'm looking for major issues in alcohol.
Right, the addiction piece.
The addictions.
Yeah.
Do people get even more aggressive right. when they're drinking?
So that's an important piece.
It's a very important. The aggression. Yeah, right? So I watch for that. The next thing is if people use language such as, if you love me. You would do this. That has nothing to do with love, if you love me. That has everything to do with manipulation.
Yes.
So that person is trying to control you by using your caring for them to get you to do something, right? If you cared about me, you would do this. What people often say is that watch what I do, not what I say, which is really important. If I care about you, then I'm going to show you by doing certain things. And that's important. And at the same time, if you have to get someone, manipulate them into doing things for you by saying, if you care, if you love me, right? Then that is a red flag for me. And I don't have anybody in my life that does that.
Right.
Because that'd be the first major red flag. The third one for me would be someone that's like constantly just taking the space. Mm-hmm. So I don't get to say anything. I'm just sitting there listening to you say everything. So where is the mutual sharing here?
Yeah.
Where are we both growing together, sharing together?
Right.
The only person sharing here is you. Mm-hmm. And all I'm hearing is you.
It's unbalanced.
So you're not listening to anything about me. So I'm walking away being exhausted because it hasn't been a sharing relationship.
Right.
So those are my three red flags.
Let's stick on red flags. Mom, do you want to go ahead?
Thank you, Blair.
Those are good.
Yeah, those are really good. And I relate to each of them. I think for me, it's tough to narrow it down, but I would say criticism.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember before I met Blair, you know, I was kind of seeing a guy who was just highly critical. And I remember, you know, he compared my body to his previous girlfriend's body and was criticizing mine. And I was in amazing shape at the time. And was at a place in my growth journey where it was no longer acceptable.
Right.
And I just walked away. Mm-hmm. Didn't explain, didn't petition in any way. I was just like, red flag. It was early enough. I mean, in relationship, there is a dynamic where we can share our needs. And if I'm doing something that is not healthy or supportive for someone, I definitely want to hear about it. But criticism is different.
Yeah.
And it is designed to diminish the other person. So that would be my first one. And the next one, which ties in, is emotional unavailability. So yeah. Someone who ignores you, someone who is passive aggressive or, rejects your invitation to emotionally connect. Huge red flag. So, yeah, I need someone who's emotionally available and willing to emotionally connect.
Yeah,
and
that's
be vulnerable.
Really important.
And then the third one, gosh, these all tie in, is self-obsession. So someone yeah. who's really high on the narcissism scale, there's really not a whole lot you can do with someone who's highly narcissistic. There's just not a whole lot of room for anyone else. And so, yeah, self-obsession is similar to what you said, Blair, someone who's not able to share the space and to be interested in your perspective and your feelings. So yeah, those are my three.
You guys are really good at this. I find it difficult because I haven't really had to decipher a lot of red flags because I am not looking for a relationship. So,
but you're in relationships.
I am in relationship, but it's like, and even with people I have engaged with, I don't see it becoming a serious thing. So if I see red flags, I'm like, eh, whatever, because we're never going to be like really intertwined.
But what have you seen? Yeah, you've seen a lot.
I'm just like trying to like think about this.
You've seen a lot.
I think my first one would be like a lack of openness to take accountability.
Yes.
Because I think, and I've had situations in the past where, you know, it might have been partly on me, but it's also on the other person as well. And they're incapable of taking that accountability and saying, you know what, listen, I messed up in this situation and I shouldn't have done that. And I think I'm really quick to take accountability. Sometimes I take too much accountability and I'll shoulder the weight for the other person a little bit too much, which I think can become kind of like a pattern. So then when issues arise, I'm like, oh, well, I understand why you did that because I was acting like this, for example, without really understanding that the other person has a role to play in everything as well. So I think accountability is something that's really big for me and being open to just admitting that we're not perfect and that people make mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely a big one for me.
Yeah.
I think another one is like, I've seen a lot of people go through this where it's like, they'll continue on in a situationship and the person's like, I don't know if I want anything serious, but like, let's just continue doing what we're doing. And like, I'll figure it out. I'm just like not in a place for a relationship right now. I don't totally believe that because like, if you were to find your true, like not even like soulmate, but like someone that you truly care for. And even if a lot of stuff is going on in your life, you would still be compelled to be like, hey, I really care for you. Let's put a label on this.
Yeah.
That's how I think of it. So I don't know if anyone truly is like not ready to be in a relationship. It just depends on the person. And so I think like having that clarity.
Yeah. So I think you're saying that someone who doesn't want to fully commit is reflective of something deeper.
Right.
Like a fear.
Yeah.
A fear. Love can be so scary.
Yeah. It's also like, if it's not a committed thing, then you both agree yes. that it's just something casual. But if there's that imbalance where someone is like yes. looking for more and the other one's like, oh, I'm not ready yet, but like, hold on. Like maybe we could be something serious in like a year or something like that. Like that's when I think it becomes really difficult. That to me is a red flag. And my third red flag, I think it is ties into what you said, because even in the last episode, I was talking about like emotional vulnerability, just being aware of their emotions. If people are really detached, I feel like that's a red flag because everyone feels, we're human. And so bottling up those emotions and becoming increasingly more detached is obviously just going to express itself in other unskillful manners. So if there's a lack of like emotional connection within themselves, I feel like that can be a red flag as well.
Because that lack of vulnerability or willingness to attach.
Yeah.
Usually comes with other unskillful coping skills.
Right. So like that numbness, it's also just difficult to open up to someone who's unable to be there for themselves. They don't know how to be there for others either.
Yeah.
So, and that's a skill. I mean, I think that we just need to learn how to be present. What do you guys think of that?
I think it's all great. I think that we have to watch when people say that they're not ready yet. And I like what you said, because if this is really the person for you, this is a perfect match. What is perfect? But I mean, if it's a good match, right? Then why would someone say, I'm not ready yet?
Yeah.
Well, maybe they are going through some period of self-reflection.
Yeah.
So that's okay. But what it could represent is commitment phobia.
Yeah, that's what I was and that's what getting
you,
at.
I think that's what you're getting at. So it's not someone saying that they're not ready yet.
Yeah.
It's someone that's using that term
for
and not understanding that they have commitment phobia.
Yeah.
So, okay, we want to go into a relationship and we know the red flags.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean we can't go in the relationship. What it does mean is that that work has to be done, right? So, like, and it's not us doing, like, it's not me doing the work.
Right.
If I'm trying to engage in a relationship with someone that has commitment phobia, then I have to ask them to go and find someone to help them with those commitment issues. If someone has addiction issues, I can't fix them with those addiction issues. They need to go and do the work. And there's going to be a period of time where I should not be engaging in a relationship with them. So to give them the space to do what they need to do to deal with their addiction issues. You can still love someone. You can still care about someone. But getting intimate with them while they're in recovery can cause some issues for yourself and the other person, because they can start using you and believing that you're the reason why they're going through this addiction, whereas they have to see the strength within themselves to get through that addiction.
Yeah.
Well, I just think what you just said could apply to every red flag.
Yeah.
Like including coercive control, which we haven't spoken about, but it's so prevalent. And coercive control is a form of abuse that involves ongoing oppression, and it's used to instill fear. And, you know, there's different things involved, like denying one's freedom, gaslighting, so the abuser must always be right, and constant criticism, and just this sense of hyper control. I think that what you said could be applied to that and all of the other red flags, where you own your stuff, you take accountability, and then you give the other person the freedom to take their own responsibility. And if they don't, there's the exit. Yeah. Like, it's a non-negotiable, really, if you're not willing to contribute. And in the last episode, we spoke about compatibility. And I think a green flag for me is compatibility, which cannot be confused with sameness.
Oh, that's a good point.
Right? Yeah. Like, Blair and I are so different.
Yeah, but you're compatible.
We're so compatible, but we're so different in so many ways. Like, before this episode, you know, he had two cappuccinos.
Right.
And a piece of toast to ground him, whereas I had, you know, coffee-flavored steam oat milk. I can't do coffee, but I love the flavor of it. So I do, you know, just a tiny little coffee. And so, you know, constitutionally and personality-wise, we're so different. And yet there's so much that we're compatible with in terms of work. Like, we both put in, you know, a compatible amount of effort into our relationship, into the family unit. And I think that's one of our winning formulas. Yeah. And, you know, when I first met you, the boxes that you ticked for me, being Italian, was your priority toward love. You know, you were just so passionate about love, not just not just intimate romantic love, but love in the greatest sense. And you also had a deep appreciation for music, which was a non-negotiable for me.
Yeah, same.
And food. You know, as a former anorexic, I was just really committed to just learning how to enjoy the pleasures of life.
Yeah.
And gosh, our kitchen is so well used. I was looking at the ceiling this morning. And it's time we repaint the ceiling because there's so much cooking and baking and food preparation that happens in our kitchen. And you just bring the kitchen alive with spice and warmth and energy and deliciousness. And so all of that is just such a beautiful green flag for me.
If I can share something, I'm going to keep driving this point home because we did talk about it in the previous episodes, but I think a functional relationship ultimately starts with you. And once you become functional within yourself, then you're more likely to attract functional people, but also be functional in a relationship. So and that I think really comes down to as well, like just self-worth,
yes.
Knowing that you are worthy of a relationship and you're worthy of people who are going to be good to you, who don't exhibit insane red flags, and who will care for you in relationship.
And if I may,
yeah,
just share that journey toward, or that journey of self-worth can be a long, hard slog.
Yeah.
I've done it. And yeah, for those of you who aren't at a place of worthiness within yourself, or if you're not at a place where you understand and know at your core that you are worthy, just know that it can be a long journey. And if I may share about the Girl on Fire manual that has a whole chapter on connection and speaks about healthy ways of creating connection and dysfunctional ways that create separation. So the manual is just has some really important bits on self-worth and healthy communication. So I just love that, Sophia. And I think that is, it's really baseline. And in the manual, you know, self-worth is second and self-awareness is first, because you have to be aware that something is missing. And I speak about self-worth or lack of self-worth being the greatest poverty, because without it, you cannot engage with other humans in a healthy way. So self-awareness is first, being aware that something is missing or that you may have dysfunctional ways, and then working toward developing more self-worth.
What I want to say, and I keep on bringing this home, I mean, we can listen to all these things about red flags, green flags, what makes us go into relationships, what stops us from going into them. But the greatest monitor of all of this is self-love. And that's something that we hear about, but it's really important to achieve it. And the only way is just to accept ourselves as we are and love ourselves for who we are. And then when we have this self-love, when the red flags come up, we say, I love me, and that is not going to be something that's going to nurture my self-love. It's going, like, if you're going to engage with a narcissist, is that going to help my self-love? If I'm going to engage with someone that's abusive, either physically or mentally, is that going to enrich my self-love? So the more we love ourselves, the healthier the relationships. And we're not talking about conceit. We're talking about self-love, which just loves yourself. Everything about who you are. Just accepting you. Just like you did when you were a baby. You didn't have all these judgments. You just loved you.
Oh, it's so perfect. I had a therapist who once pointed out to me, you know, you've lived your whole life in a state of self-criticism. How did that work out for you? Didn't work out very well. It made me very sick. And so I think that we don't talk enough about that, just the importance of self-love for ourselves, but also for the health of our relationships with other people. Thank you, Blair.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sophia. Thank you, Jenny.
Yeah, we'll be back for our very last one, which is going to be on recovery and repair, which I think is really important to just sustaining relationships. Because if you're not comfortable coming together for recovery and repair, I definitely don't always do it in a functional manner. So I am going to be the student in the next one as well.
Yeah. You're awesome, Sophia.
Yeah, you're all awesome.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
We're all awesome.
See you in the next episode.
See you later, everybody.
Bye.